Hello, my name is Ricardo Souza and this is my podcast on craft beer. Today we're doing this in English because my guest is not Portuguese, he's Spanish, and because my Spanish is absolutely terrible. It's my pleasure to present you Jaime Bru from Attic Brewing.
Well, thank you very much for receiving me today.
You are welcome. Thank you for coming.
Coming from Malaga, direct to Aveiro for a holiday, and this was a great opportunity. So thank you very much.
To drink some beers and talk about beer.
Exactly.
Great.
Exactly.
Jaime, first question. Is Bru your real middle name, or did you just invent that?
It's a coincidence. it sounds the same as brewing, no? But it's spelled differently, and honestly, it's a Catalan surname.
Okay.
From the north of Spain. My father is from Tarragona, which is in the south of Barcelona.
Okay.
So in that area, that surname is common, but it has nothing to do with beer.
But that's perfect.
Yeah.
We met at Porto Beer Fest last year. And I guess some people also that are listening to this podcast met you as well there.
Yes.
How come did you go there? Why? Were you invited? Did you propose yourselves to be there?
Well, we started one of our things as we are gypsy brewers. Mm-hmm. We do travel a lot, doing lots of fairs around Spain especially. And one of the fairs we did was in the north of Spain, in Galicia, Porto Marín. And there we managed to meet Ricardo. I know, Ricardo.
Which one?
The one from Porto Beer Fest.
Octavio.
And we met there, he tried our beers, we started talking to him, a very nice person. And we started talking about coming to Caminha, coming to Porto Beer Fest and stuff. And we got invited to the Porto Beer Fest. So it was a good chance to go internationally, basically, because we had never been out of Spain.
Oh, that was first time.
So first time was Oporto, yes.
Do you have any great experience you had there that you want to share with us?
In Oporto Beer Fest?
Yeah.
I think it's the biggest fest we've been up to date.
Yeah.
It was incredible the amount of people there were there. Normally in Spain, we have been to many fests which are big, have many people, they're very good beers. But so many people, so many breweries, and so many different types of beers, drinks like cider and stuff. We have never been there before.
Okay, and during those days, you managed to connect with the people, with the brewers as well, or just serving beer?
What
was the experience?
Well, I think it was a very good experience because I think my mate on the business, and we are kind of really open to meeting new people. We love what we do, so we just don't sell beers. We like talking about our beers, how we make them and why it's like this and stuff. So it was a great opportunity to basically get the people to know what we do in another place that is not Spain, and to meet brewers we haven't met before and that we admire, no? I know a few, so for example, here in Portugal make very good beer. White Dog, they're from the Netherlands too. And then there was this Alfa Sidra, I think it was.
Yeah, they were right next to you.
Really next
I
to
remember.
Us. We made very good connection.
That's good.
And basically,
we
many
also
brewers,
have some of their ciders there.
I saw it before. So it was a great opportunity to meet people and not be in our comfort zone, because we had to speak Portuguese and we have to sell our product in a different way, no?
And what was the feedback from the people? I know that in beer festivals, everybody's happy, everybody says the beer is good, but what did you feel?
Well, we start on a base that we have... I would say quite modern styles of beer. So that requires an explanation. So I think at the beginning, when you give the first taste, people always have kind of a surprise face. But once they taste it and you explain, they like it, no? So I mean, innovation, that complexity makes it interesting for people. No, I think the people liked it. We did sell quite well. And what we had left over, we managed to leave it for the rest of Portugal.
So you managed to sell the rest of the kegs.
Yeah, which is a good feedback in a way, because it means that people liked our beer.
Exactly, that's the thing. From that experience in Porto, did you get any ideas about some new collabs, even some ideas for new beers that people suggested you to do?
Well,
what was the overall take of the festival?
Okay.
In terms of future, I mean.
In future, well, we want to come back to Portugal.
For sure.
Hopefully we'll do a tap takeover here in Lovecraft one day.
That's a promise.
And, well, the opportunity of meeting different brewers from around the world, I knew there was this, I would have to check the name of the brewery, but he made very exotic beers, like saisons with cilantro, fruits, spices and stuff, which we don't do, and okay. which I find really interesting doing. And then there was these English people, which I don't remember their name either.
North Brewing?
No, it wasn't North. I have to check. But they made really smoothie sours, very dense beers.
Don't remember.
And, well, I have to check. And that is also inspiring because you talk to them about the amount of fruit they use, the process they use, which is what we don't do. We do, we've done sour ales, we've done imperial stouts, we've done IPAs, we've done lagers. But those kind of more extreme beers is what we haven't entered yet and where we like to do. So it's an inspiration for us.
Okay, that's good. But any collaborations that were really just booked or not yet?
The thing is that...
I'm trying to push this subject because I really want you to try to do something with Portuguese, with the Portuguese brewery.
We have spoken quite a few times with Portuguese breweries and we haven't closed anything.
Okay.
But we have met them. So we know these things happen like they happen. I mean, one day maybe I come here, I meet the brewer of some place,
yeah,
and we just start chatting, and next week I'm back in Portugal doing a beer, you know?
That's what I want.
Exactly. That's what we hope to happen.
Because the reason why you are here is because, of course, I invited you. Mm-hmm. And when we met in Porto, I drank your beers and I really like them. And also I have some here at Lovecraft and the feedback has been great.
Excellent.
So I'm really pushing you to have a stronger presence in our country. I know that you sell, of course, beer in Portugal. Mm-hmm. I've been to Catraio last week, and they have your beers as well.
They do.
And they are just one of the biggest, if not the biggest, bar in Portugal when it comes to craft beer.
Mm-hmm.
So your presence is here, but I would like to see something deeper, and a collab would be great.
In the next few months, I'm sure I'll come around
great.
A few times. So I have no excuse to not do any collabs. Yeah. And we're always open to doing collabs. I think that's one of the things we enjoy the most.
That's a nice segue for me to go to the next stage of our conversation, in which regards the contract brewing.
Okay.
Because one of the things, as far as I understand from you, one of the good things about being a nomad brewer is that kind of relationship with people, right?
Exactly.
Can you explain why you are still after 6 years?
5 years.
5 years? Why you are still nomad?
Well...
Sorry to interrupt you. Maybe you would like to start from the beginning and say how things... Okay,
so basically our story is we have been home brewers for many years. I think early 2011, 2012, more or less.
Okay.
And we did it as a hobby, three friends of us, in the attic of my house. So that's where the name comes from and kind of the logo. Because as you can see, it's a triangle,
yeah,
which represents the roof of a house. And anyway, we started doing barbecues at home and many friends came over.
Of course.
And
meat and beer.
Yeah, exactly.
People come.
I mean, you can't say no to that, no? So people really enjoyed it. We did many styles of beers. We did Weiss beer. We did wheat beers. We did Belgian style. IPAs, very few, because we didn't have the machinery to do it properly. So the product wasn't, you know, top as we liked it.
Understand.
We did imperial stouts. We did barrel-aged imperial stouts too. And then we decided to have a try and see what happened if we took a beer out. How did we start? The thing is that, why are we nomad brewers? Because our philosophy is organic growth. So we started with very little money. And from that and the first batch, we started generating to brew the next batch. And so on and so on and so on.
So no financing? No
finance.
Okay.
Like literally no finance. And that is one thing we really enjoy because, I mean, it requires a lot of effort, creativity, and effort, I mean, not only brewing, but selling, designing.
Of course.
Contacting people, traveling and all that. And anyway, it's worked really well for us in that sense because we do both still have our jobs apart from the beer. I've been up to three jobs simultaneously. I could leave one to dedicate more time to beer. my friend also has his job, and we always have to make time and see where we can get time for this, which now is what we look the other way. We look to have time for the rest, and we enjoy doing this. And since it worked well, and it gives us the chance to travel a lot, which means doing collabs, which means meeting new people, which means going to fairs, we kind of enjoy that. So,
I mean, that's the good thing about being a nomad, right?
For us, yes. I understand there are other things. For example, maybe the cost, the way to sell beers, because you always brew in different places. We brew in four or five different places, no? So we have to
bring at the same time, simultaneously. That's difficult to handle, no?
I mean, everything has its pros and its cons, no?
Of course.
And this month we've brewed in three different places, so we're receiving six, seven different beers up in Malaga. Okay. And then from there we distribute. No?
This is very interesting because this has been a very common issue on my conversations with people. The fact that many brands are choosing to make their beers on somebody else's facilities, mm-hmm. Due to many reasons, being one, the cost of production and the maintenance of such facilities, right?
Yes, that is one thing. But, I mean, it is really expensive to set up a brewery.
And to maintain it.
And to maintain it, obviously, and the time you dedicate to it. This is our way of doing it. If in an ideal world, I would have a big brewery, I would spend time there. But that would take time from other things we do, we also enjoy doing.
What do you lose by not having your own place?
Well, I think just absolute liberty to do whatever we want.
Okay.
That means adding fruits. That means barrel aging beers.
Mm-hmm.
That means having projects that can go bad or can go really well and just decide 100% what you do.
So you feel a bit stuck, a bit limited?
I wouldn't say limited, because at the end of the day, you always can just look around and take time and stuff. But you just have to be like really conscious and very like rigid on your timetable,
because mm-hmm.
you know you brew this day, or that brewery has that time to brew. You have to adapt to them. You have X days to make the labels, X days to distribute, etc., etc. No, mine. If you had your own brewery, you decide whenever you do one thing. Maybe if it works today, you do it. If not, you'll do it tomorrow. I mean, there are many chances, no? But honestly, I don't see myself having a brewery at this moment of
life. Not yet.
Not yet. I would prefer much to have a bar.
Okay.
Or something related.
That's nice. That's nice.
Which is kind of more social.
Yeah, yeah.
And since we are kind of that style of people.
Yeah, I understand that. Because if you are a nomad, you like to be with people, as I said before. You like to meet new people. You like to discuss things with other people, get new ideas. So, of course, a bar would be an open door for that interaction to happen.
Plus, it's a way of income, too.
Of course. And that's a way of you selling your own beer.
Exactly.
At the price you want to sell it. How is that plan going?
So far, so good.
Yeah.
The thing is that we have to go step by step.
Okay.
So, I mean, we do have a place already we've thought about. And we're just working out in the near future how things are going, organizing ourselves, how we can do it properly. Because, I mean, it's very easy.
That's in Malaga, right?
In Malaga, yes. We would do it in our hometown, which is Benalmádena Torremolinos. But not yet, because as I said before, we try to do everything organically. And when we see the moment and we have the time, we'll just go for it. And
but then you'd have to step away from your other jobs, right?
I mean, you have to take risks in life, no?
Yeah.
If you don't do it, you don't win. So
that's the thing.
It can always go wrong, but you have to try at least, no?
What was the main stepstone or the main moment that you saw that things changed forever with Attic?
Okay. When we started as Attic, we focused on what we thought people would like.
Okay.
And that is not our philosophy in reality. So we started doing beers that we thought, okay, people will like this. People will like this. And then COVID started. And we sat we opened a website in 48 hours,
mm-hmm.
2 days without sleeping, online.
I can imagine.
Okay, we have our website and we can sell beers on the internet. Okay?
Yeah.
That worked amazing. But in COVID, since we were spent lots of time at home and stuff, it was like a point where we decided, look, where are we going? What are we doing? and how can we change, how can we make this work, no? So in that point, we decided, look, let's do beers we like doing, because those are the best beers we probably can do. And we like, since you like it, you're going to do it even better.
That's the thing.
So we started doing IPAs. We started doing Imperial Stouts. We started doing sour beers with fruits. I mean, you could bury a brewery in fruits of the amount of fruit we use.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Crazy.
It's crazy.
And then we met a brewer called Aleix from Màger. He's a Catalan brewer. And we've bonded really well. So we kind of entered that world too. And from there, from COVID onwards, is where we decided to just do whatever we want. And since then, it's worked out crazy.
But you changed your philosophy in terms of creation, but what about in terms of business management?
Well, automatically changing the way of brewing, the business just started working much better.
Okay.
And that means, you know, cans, the styles of beers. Everybody drinks IPAs nowadays. Everybody.
Yeah.
And that started working really well. So we started just looking around. From there, we started doing more collabs. So that means the business started growing too. We opened to many, much more distribution than we did before.
Okay.
And the way of selling was much more like dynamic, no? Before, we used to be like door by door, calling people, see what they wanted. And that just suddenly changed, and we could, you know, the business started running. Now, in fact, the growth of the business was from COVID onwards. So it sounds, I don't know if it's correct to say, but COVID, and for us as a business, helped us a lot.
No, that is common to other people as well. When you start thinking about your beers, do you have any specific strategy? Do you have any specific thing you want to share with us? Where do you get your ideas? Do you have inspiration on other brands?
I think nowadays practically everything is invented. I mean, there's always room for innovation.
Of course.
But we do get inspired by many breweries. I can't say names because, you know, one day you open Instagram and you see something.
Yeah.
The next day you open Facebook and you see another thing. So everything can inspire us. And, new hops always inspire you, new yeasts, barrel aging beers, using sour beers, using fruits. I think we were the first people, I would say in the world, maybe, to do a waxed can.
What's that?
You know how the bottles use the wax?
Yeah.
To protect from, you know, for time, especially Imperial Stouts or sour beers. So we decided to wax a can with a special lid we designed. So, I mean, the can was waxed. You can check it on our Instagram. The beer is called Tango Dragon.
Okay, I have to check that.
Yes, check
Sorry,
it.
Sorry, I missed that.
No, it's really crazy. So we had to wax one by one and put a special lid so you could break the wax and then open the beer. I know Amundsen did it, but the other way around. They waxed the bottom part. We did it from the top.
Okay.
Okay. The can looked amazing. It was a headache. It was expensive, but it was really unique. So when people had the beer, they wanted to keep the can as something special.
Of course.
We have received criticism for that because at the end of the day, it's kind of marketing. But I mean, it's also fun to do it. We do these things for fun.
Yeah, that's the point, right?
Yeah, I mean,
because if you want to make a lot of beer and make a lot of money, okay, go ahead and do it. But yeah. I think that being happy with what you do, having fun while doing it,
exactly. I mean, that is the inspiration of. You
of
know?
Course.
I mean, if you do it with because you want to and you feel cool about it, just do it.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I think beer is about having fun, right?
Definitely.
When I started on this business myself, and sorry for taking these few minutes to talk about myself.
Please do.
People that are listening to it, they know me already, but you don't. When I started this business, I was too serious about the beer, you know? I wanted to drink the fine beers and understand what was behind it and feel the hops and feel everything on my nose and on my mouth. Everything was very serious, you know, yes. Very professional, because that's the way I was brought on the business, all the businesses and all the jobs I had before. I was very professional, always wearing a suit, and everything was very strict. And so when I came to beer, I thought, okay, if I want to make a living out of this, I have to be also very professional, very, very strict. I'm not saying that we should not be professional. Of course, we have to be professional.
Of course.
But come on. It's beer. Let's have some fun. That's why you like beer, right?
Fun can be linked with being professional too. I mean, it's nothing wrong about it.
But that took me a lot of time to understand. And people started to criticize me. And I remember the first few times I met some brewers, and they said to me, come on, forget that.
Drink a
beer.
Who
cares?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And I was asking about the hops and about the process. And I don't remember exactly who said that to me, but he said to me, Ricard, just drink the beer.
Exactly. That is one of the things I like and dislike about beer. And I mean, when you brew a beer, you obviously have to be very careful.
Of course.
You have to be very selective. And anyway, it's your product, no? So you want to do it the best way you can, obviously. But when you go out drinking with friends, which happens, I mean, who doesn't go out for a beer with a friend, no? Just get a beer you like, drink it, and speaking bad, just fuck the rest.
No? Yeah, exactly, that's the point. And if you want to analyze a beer, of course you must, you should, that's your job. And of course we have to grow. Just take your beer home, just open it, and drink it slowly, smell it, look at it, write your notes on a piece of paper or online, whatever. But when you are with friends, when you are with people...
In a social way.
Just drink enjoy.
You know, you like West Coast IPAs, or you like Imperial Stouts. Get one, enjoy it, and
that's it.
Get out the way. And one thing it used to annoy me was that when we used to meet to drink or whatever, we would always be talking about the beer we're drinking.
No? Yeah, that's it.
And I'd like, come on, man. Okay, we know we want to learn. We know this is this and this is that. But just drink the beer. Let's talk about whatever you have to talk, and that's it, no? And that is a cool thing about beer, I suppose, no? Because it's very social, and... I suppose everyone nowadays knows more or less that drinks craft beer, know what the styles are, know what this and that. And a beer can be better or worse, but at the end of the day, if it's more fresh and cold, you're going to drink it, no?
Yeah, that's the thing. And you said it before, like everything was already invented. Okay, you can change one or two things, of course, and you can always innovate. I'm not saying you cannot. You can and you should. Mm-hmm. You should keep the market strong and healthy, of course, interesting. But in the end, it's beer. Right?
Exactly. Right. Exactly. One thing is, you could divide into two sides. Now, the work side, which has to be really professional, and then the social side, no? Or the social, or just being, just going to a bar and drinking, no? And, you know, just enjoy what you're doing when you're working, and enjoy what you're doing when you're drinking, no?
That's part of... how many people are on the company?
We're two.
We're two. Okay, so we cannot talk about... company philosophy, but does you meet share with you this?
We do share a lot. We divide more. We are divided into sections. I'm more in charge of the beers, as in the brewing, the designs, and stuff. And he is very focused on selling, on distribution, on just making sure the product is always sent well, it's maintained well. I mean, everything. No, that's. I would say behind the lights, no? And
you meet also as his job, right?
Yes. Okay, so we both have our jobs. In that way, we try to be very professional. One thing we really enjoy is when we get our beer from the brewing, they're sent to our warehouse. The first thing we do before organizing shit is opening a can and tasting the beer.
Of course.
And that is always like... Okay, well, we say the same. The beer can be terrible, but we're going to say the beer is amazing, you know? So then we calm down, we relax, and then we do the job, no? But we do talk a lot about beer, but not as in like something really strict, no? We just say, oh, I discovered this. It's really cool. Or look at these people, what they're doing. Or I would like to brew this and that. But we don't go like into very deep focus because... We already know each other. We know what we're doing.
Yeah, you've been friends for many years now, right?
I met him in school when I was like 8 years old.
Wow.
And we started being friends when he stabbed a pencil in my hand. and I started bleeding. So since then we're friends. So
and how do you manage to be friends and still work together? Because there's obviously it's beer. Of course, we have fun, but there's also very stress associated with having a company.
At the end of the day, trust and confidence is key for everything, no? So we know our personalities. We get along very well. We know our weaknesses and strengths of each other. So we always try to complement one thing with one another. And sometimes one can be stronger, sometimes one can be weak. So we just try to like work in parallel and just get the things done.
Are you not afraid that this may ruin your friendship?
No. If it hasn't happened already, it's not going
to
happen.
But the company will grow, right? You're planning to
always
to have more people working with you. No. I know you. Okay. No. I just want. That's interesting.
We're really happy working together. When we were home brewers, we were three.
Yeah, I remember.
Which is another friend we had who went to work to the US. And maybe the day of tomorrow, if he wanted, because, I mean, he's a friend of all our life too, he would also, we'd be very happy for him to come in. That is the only possibility, I think, because we don't want to give explanations to anybody. We have our way of doing things and we enjoy doing it like this. And, I mean, when things work, why change, no?
Yeah.
And I think working together works well. When we have problems, we know how to solve them together. We can always shout to each other, give us a slap. Mm-hmm. And 5 minutes after, we're friends again. And that is how we solve problems.
So okay, sounds
good. We don't want
good.
To deal with any more problems with exterior.
But don't you fear that you may not go beyond this as a company, that you will not grow? Or you just don't want to grow?
Well, since we started, every year our growth has been I don't know how to explain it, but much more than the year before.
Okay
so the first year we started, we did, just to make an example, I suppose, 800 liters we did, which was the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went up to like 2,000 or 3,000.
Okay.
Next year, then we went up to 12,000 the following, then we went up to 34,000.
Wow.
So, I mean, things are working well. And what I'm trying to say is that to have more beer to make the company grow bigger, we think we don't need more people. Maybe we need more space just for the warehouse.
But you do have a warehouse, right? I understood you have a cold warehouse.
Cold warehouse, okay. Where everything is kept there. We've been exporting for a few years already. We've exported to Japan, all around Europe.
Oh, that's nice.
UK, France, all these European countries.
Can you explain the people that are listening to us, how is that process handled? How do you find the places to export? Are you contacted by those people?
It's a bit of everything.
Okay.
So we are always looking to improve, and I don't mean by exporting, I mean just the product, the marketing, the philosophy, the export, everything. So when you have something which is controlled, like, for example, the brewing process, we could say the one person who is dedicated to designs, the other one who is dedicated to photography, the other one who is dedicated to selling, we divide our jobs. You pay less attention and you have more time because everything is like done already, no? You know, with the people you can work with and you don't. So we always find time and space to look for new things, no? There's always opportunities. And I mean, we don't think we need more people to do this, because at the end of the day, if you sell more, you just make another pallet or brew more beer, which is simple in a way, if you get what I mean, because you just design a recipe, work it out, try it out, and get the job done. And exporting, I mean, it's just contact the company, keep working. And when the thing is done and organized, you set up the pallet and you send it, no? That's what I mean. Maybe if we had a brewery, we would need more people because it takes a lot of time and stuff. But we can manage. We always do deliveries every week around Malaga. We always prepare for our distributors. We have time to make our beers. We have time to enjoy our beers. And we've noticed that since the first year to now, the amount of time we spend is not much more than before. Okay. It's just better spent. If you get what I mean.
Jaime, we are now getting close to half time.
Okay, excellent.
So let's make a break to thank my sponsor.
Okay.
Grab another beer.
Excellent.
And then we'll come back to talk about a bit the market and how Spain relates to Portugal. What are your expectations about the future regarding the changes of the market itself? Okay.
Let's go.
See you. From the factory to the pub. From the coupler to the keg barrel tap. From beer to wine. To soft drinks and cocktails. At Pop, we create solutions for what is yet to come. Pop. Pipes of Peace. Ecological solutions, one dream at a time. So, we're back now for the second half of our conversation with Jaime from Attic Brewing. Jaime, we talked about Porto Beer Fest already, but I wanted to ask you, how about the differences between that festival and other festivals you've seen in Spain or even outside the Spain and Portugal?
Okay, so my experience is that in Spain, we are still at a very early stage in craft beer and we have plenty of room for growth. And I say this because in the festivals we participate, unless it's a very specialized festival, many of the people that come barely know what an IPA is or an Imperial Stout or sour beers, like very few people.
I would not expect you to say that about Spain.
Well, I'm talking about our experience, which this year has been, I mean, it depends on the area. I think in the north of Spain, there's much more culture in craft beer. I don't know, maybe because it's closer to Europe, or because I would say the most famous breweries are there. But especially in the south of Spain, we do have a lot of space for improvement. So in fairs, I think apart from selling, which obviously is what you do in fairs, we do kind of an educational job there, which is explain people what a craft beer is in the sense of why is it bitter? Why is it dark? Why does it look red? Why is it acidic or why whatever, no? And anyway, I feel like that is our part, a part of our job at the moment. And what I saw in Portugal, my experience is the Porto Beer Fest, is that many people already knew what they wanted. And more than getting to know what type of beer is choosing what beer they like. In the sense that...
That's surprising to me.
That is my experience.
Okay, no? That's nice.
I understand that Oporto is a very big city. There are many people that come and not everyone is the same. But in Spain is similar. It depends on the festival. But we do a focus on a lot of trying to explain people, getting to know what a craft beer can be and what it is. No?
When you have the time. Sometimes it's so crazy on festivals that you don't even have
That's
time
the thing.
To.
It never is. We don't really suffer from being like over... saturated of people at the same moment, no? I mean, always there's sometimes to be in a hurry, but you always have like just maybe half a minute or whatever to explain to the person, to give them to try and see what they like or not. Or at least is what we do.
Yeah, that was my next question. Exactly. Is that a general thing? Do you see that other brewers do the same?
Yes, I suppose many people do. And that is one of the things we like doing, no? When you grab our beer, we want you to take our beer because you like it and you know what you're drinking.
When you said that the Spanish market is not that that old, it's still young, can you give us an exact date or somewhere like when it really started or what was the moment that you say, okay, the market in Spain just started?
No. Well, for me, it's a very difficult question.
I can understand. Sorry for that.
But okay, I'll try answering the best I can. We've been around for, as a business, 5 years. And before we were homebrewers. And I would say, and this is my experience, I'm not saying I'm right or anything.
Of course.
From 5 years back, I mean, not 5 years, maybe 8 years back, there weren't many IPAs as such, apart from the West Coast IPAs. And I think all the new market of the New England IPAs, hazy IPAs, et cetera, is what is helping quite a lot to get people to introduce themselves to craft beer.
Okay, that's nice.
I think the fruitiness, the smoothness, that kind of body.
You think they are easy beers, you know, that easy it's, beers. It's easy to like them.
Exactly. I would say because of the flavor, especially. I mean, everyone likes, not everyone, but, you know, mm-hmm. the kind of those sweet, fruity, fresh flavors is something very, very drinkable, no? Very nice to taste. And that opens your mind to the next, no? Which maybe you can go to double IPAs or maybe to more bitter beers. From there, you can start experimenting with maybe stouts. Many people like chocolate. Many people like coffee. Many people like all kind of these
flavors. Yeah, but there's a certain amount of beer that you, or imperial stout that you can drink, which obviously. Is far less than West Coast IPAs or
obviously.
Or
but I mean, you don't have to drink 2 liters to enjoy beer.
No, no, no. You should not.
or yes, you never know. No, but. And then one thing which I find kind of interesting is the sour beers, maybe Wild Ales, Lambics, Berliner Weiss and all these kind of style of beers. People accept them quite well because since there is cider
mm-hmm.
and the cider has kind of a similar profile in a way, is not as surprising as maybe, for example, to drink an Imperial Stout with cherries, chocolate and... coconut, no? Yeah. To say something really extreme, no? But it's cool because the people like to try flavors. One thing is trying and one thing is drinking them. So, I mean, I think we're still in kind of that process, no?
And how is that Portugal a bit, Spain a bit like Portugal is a wine country, right?
Yes.
How is that causing you issues in educating people towards drinking beer instead of wine? Well, look, I'm not saying instead like you have to replace wine. No. I drink wine myself. But how do you explain people that you can also have a glass of beer while eating meat or having lunch or having whatever?
It's very complicated, I think, because the first part is for maybe restaurants and bars to be open-minded, to introduce that kind of product to them.
The same problem in Portugal.
Because if you pay 5-6 euros for a glass of a good wine, why can't you pay 6 or 7 euros for a good can of beer or a bottle? You know, so the first problem we always find is that in bars and restaurants, they always look for a bottle, no? And what I'm trying to say is that they have so integrated that kind of concept as beer, that when you try to juice a can, maybe, they see it as you're drinking a Red Bull, a Monster, or something really crazy. Yeah. That just, since they don't understand and they don't know how to sell it, obviously it stops them, you know? Yeah. And obviously the price for them is not something they're used to because, I mean, everyone is happy paying 20 or 30 euros for a good bottle of wine, but not everybody's happy paying 15 or 20 euros for a 75 centiliter bottle of an Alambic beer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think that step is still a distance we still have to make and educate people maybe. And probably it's more our fault than anybody other, you know? I mean,
what do you mean?
Like, we haven't done that job yet. No? In the USA, people have been drinking IPAs I think since the 80s or 90s, more or less.
Yeah.
You know? And that's kind of the year distance they've had and the time to be able to educate their kind of people, no? And for us, it's still something really new. So we kind of, I think we're in the step of we're introducing what an IPA is or a craft lager.
Well, that's more difficult, I think.
It is difficult.
How can you explain somebody that a beer that looks like a regular beer?
Industrial beer, no?
It's different and it's more expensive, but it's worth it.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, when you try a lager, a good lager, and you know it's cold, it's crispy, it's flavorful, you have that cereal flavor in your mouth, and that color maybe, even though it can be very similar, but maybe that foam, that aroma... you just have to be open to it, no?
Do you think there's the needles are turning? Maybe we are seeing a different stage now where people like you and me are looking for lagers instead of IPAs?
Well, I have that's a complicated question.
Because you like IPAs a lot, I know.
I'll tell you one thing. Umid, my mate, He is really into lagers and many styles of lagers and IPAs too. And I really enjoy more of imperial stouts and probably double IPAs.
Okay.
So in a way, yes, I do see a lot of craft beer drinkers and you know, people from the industry that are really into lagers now. It's not something that I find like amazing, even though I really enjoy a lager. I don't say I don't like lagers, don't get me wrong. But for some reason, I do enjoy much more, maybe a small pint, a half a pint of Imperial Stout than three or four lagers.
Honestly, I also drink much more IPAs and Imperial Stouts than I do lagers.
No?
But when I drink it, because I must confess also as well that also that there's not that many good lagers in the market, mm-hmm. okay? And that's a real problem. Usually, some people make lagers to be cheap.
Okay.
So we can have, like we do here, cheap number one beer.
Okay.
The one that we call in Portugal the house beer.
Okay.
And so we have to make it as cheap as possible.
Okay, yes.
But it's difficult to find a good one. But obviously, when I do find a good one, damn, I drink it a lot. In Caminha, the festival this year, we had like this meeting, with brewers meeting for lunch, and we had two different lager beers, and amazing. They were just, yeah, everybody drank that and everybody loved that because they were good and people want good lagers, you know?
Yeah,
and everybody there was brewer. They were brewers, so they knew about beer, and people just drank that.
Well, I have to say that I think in Spain we do have very good craft lagers. We started making one in collaboration with a brewery.
Which one?
Rio Azul from Sevilla.
Sorry.
I mean, I could say a few breweries that do have very good. Baskeland has a very good lager.
Which one? What's the name?
Santa Clara. The lager they have.
I think I had that some time ago.
Rio Azul also have very good lagers. Zeta from Valencia have very good lagers. San Frutos from Segovia have amazing lagers.
You work with them, right?
We do. Gross. And I could say quite a few breweries more that do have good lagers. So, I mean, the problem is not the quality. It's just how to get to that market.
I think Spiga also had one. Spiga has a very good one.
Every brewery well-considered, probably has a good lager.
Okay. Because they know how difficult it is to make a good one
exactly.
and how good it tastes when it's good, exactly. when it's well-made.
Exactly.
Okay. So do you think that, okay, we will, maybe some things change, but IPAs will always be there, Imperial Stouts will always be there?
Well, they said Napas was a fashion.
Yeah.
And 5 years later,
they are still there.
I see all the fridges full of Napas, and probably out of 6 or 8 taps from each bar, 2 or 3 are Napas or something similar.
Yeah,
double dry hopped, double IPAs, something related, no hazy IPAs. So IPAs, I mean, I don't think it's a fashion anymore. It's a thing, and it's just another product in the market that works well and people like. Why not?
As far as you talked before about opening your own place, you do understand that you need to sell more.
Yes.
And sometimes having a triple IPA or a double IPA means that you will not sell that much. You may sell one pint, but you definitely will not, well, maybe you sell two, but the amount of beer that people buy is somewhere related to the amount of alcohol in each glass of beer, right?
And since we are in the south of Spain and it's a very hot weather.
Yeah, that's what
people want low alcohol beers, no? So one of the things we do a lot, and it's kind of our philosophy in a way, is that we obviously try to brew very drinkable IPAs and drinkable beers in general, no? But one thing is the product we get out to sell, no? Which obviously pays our bills.
Of course.
And then we do also like doing plenty of beers for reputation, which is the ones we like doing, no? We've been, for example, and this is the first time I think I'll say it in public, but we've been barrel aging Imperial Stouts for 1.5 years already in different
nice.
Cognac, Jamaican rum, Jack Daniels, and French oak barrels. And now we want to do a blend and then let them mature in bottle for a few months to see when it's optimum to get them out. We've done those sour beers you have in the fridge.
Mm-hmm.
We did a big batch, and we've taken 2 years to brew that.
Oh.
We let it for a year in barrels, then we added the fruits, then we blended the different beers. And those kind of beers are the ones, maybe, as you say, if we had a bar, we would have very drinkable beers, but always a selection of something really impressive, no? Or at least we would try to make it impressive.
But maybe on bottle, in the bottles, or on tap, it would be like drinkable, like
maybe you have
easy drinking. Or
if you have 6 or 7 taps, you can always put 1 or 2 of something special.
I think so.
People enjoy it because, you know, it's not something common, so you want to go there and drink it, you know.
Okay.
Maybe you can always have a pint of a lager and maybe a small one of this. And
how do you see you talked about the low alcohol ones. How do you see the non-alcoholic beers market evolving?
Well, it's something I've learned recently about non-alcoholic beers. Well, basically, just for life reasons, we started trying and tasting non-alcoholic beers.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized there's a big space for improvement, because what we understand as a non-alcoholic beer is probably kind of a lager flavored beer, as very just industrial kind of flavor, just very simple, maybe a bit of sweetness, highly carbonated, and that's it. No,
if you were challenged to make one, would you do one?
I spoke to my mate 2 weeks ago to do one.
Can you explain us how you make a beer without alcohol? How is that?
Well, I think that's a very...
Don't go into many technical details, because I don't understand them as well. But
I'll try and keep it as simple as please. I can. And with the knowledge I have, which is another thing.
That's.
So we would just use a very low malt bill. Obviously, the more malt you use, the more sugars, the more fermentation, the more alcohol.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So just a very low malt bill. Try and give the beer body, a bit of body, probably by adding some extracts, malt extracts or something non-fermentable, which just gives maybe...
So you have to choose the non-fermentable ones?
Yeah, there is malt extracts which don't ferment, or sugars that don't ferment, which you can always add a little bit. And obviously, if you asked me, I would try to make it a bit hoppy, just for aroma, just for that kind of flavor, which maybe is more related to an IPA than a lager. And probably that would balance the sweetness of the malt bill, no? So I'll probably, if I made a non-alcoholic beer, it would be an IPA or something similar.
Because you can also, as you said before, you can add the hops.
Yes, of course.
And still like mask it.
Always.
Like it looks like a beer, it smells like a beer with alcohol.
Exactly.
But in the end, it does not have any alcohol.
Yeah, or at least the least possible, no?
And how can you make an imperial stout? Well, it would not be imperial because it does not have alcohol. But how can you make a stout with... Because stouts, they are more malty, right?
Yes, that is a good question. I would have to think about it. But
because I've seen some.
Yeah, but from the top of my head... I know there is malt extracts without sugar, which come from black or burnt or dark malts, which just gives color. So probably, and that kind of gives a small roasty coffee flavor to it.
But so, the body, you will never have the body.
That's the thing. You won't have the body, but I mean, I don't think you can have it all.
That's right.
So as long as, and maybe you can add a cold brew of coffee to the beer. Maybe you can add some chocolate extract, I don't know, something which kind of reminds you to what a stout is, no? So just playing around with ingredients, no? When you're at home and you don't have nothing in the fridge, you have to make dinner with whatever you have.
That's true.
And something will come out for sure, no?
So no, for sure.
You always have to find the way.
So we were talking about Spain, but how does that relate to other countries? Do you see that coming from other places as well? You said that you export to other countries, like Japan. Do you see any influence coming from that side?
I see in Europe. I think the European countries, maybe I would say about England, maybe Holland, Norway, Sweden, Germany, and those places. And I'm missing quite a lot. I'm not being specific.
No worries.
But I think they have much more culture in that sense. because even though they, I mean, at the end of the day, countries like Belgium, Germany, and so on, England, have culture for beer from many years ago. So more than starting to learn about new beers, it's just the evolution of what's coming in. They respect what people used to drink, introducing new beers, no? And I think they complement really well. And that job has been done previously by them, as okay. in there are much more breweries, there's much more drinking culture, and for some reason price, in a way, is not a problem that can be in Spain at the moment.
At the moment. Let's be more specific now. We are getting close to the end of our show. I always wanted to say the end of our show. Okay. It means like I'm on TV or something like. Yeah. Sounds great. I really love this one, so I'm going to repeat it.
Please.
Now we are getting close to the end of our show.
Okay.
And I want to ask you about Malaga itself.
Okay.
How does that region changes the way you look at beer? I mean, what influences do you get from the region itself? Is it a good? Is it important to you? Do you try to go and meet the people's expectations because they like to drink something like that or eat something like that?
Mm-hmm. Well, fortunately, Malaga, I think, is one of the cities in Spain that has the biggest amount of craft beer bars.
Really?
Well, that's probably like 11 or 12 bars.
So we had to record almost 1 hour of this podcast for me to...
always comes at the end.
Right.
So, I mean, other cities, Córdoba, Sevilla, Jaén, Huelva. I'm talking about Andalucía in general. They do have very few bars, but Malaga, for some reason... I don't know. I don't know how to answer this question the way that why that we have so many bars, no? So fortunately, we do get along with all of the bars practically, and we do sell to all of the bars. And for us, it's really cool because we always do our deliveries personally to the bars. We dedicate a day a week, so we go to the bars, we see what they want, we have a beer, we have a chat. We even do collabs with bars already.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, since we do have a very good relationship with all of them, we always know what they like, what works, what doesn't work, and what type of beers people want. No, I mean, our main target is always focus on your locals and then do the rest. No, so Malaga in that way works really well. We sell quite a lot. We do it personally, which I think is a very important. It's very important for us to keep direct contact with them. If you don't pay attention to your house, how are you going to pay attention to
the rest?
No? And then there comes the rest. No, so Malaga is really cool in that sense. We're organizing a festival now with some people.
Your own? I mean, like Attic Festival or
no,
Malaga?
It's called Malavirra. We managed to contact very cool breweries from Spain. And we're trying to organize something really cool. We're doing a homebrew session there so people know how to brew at home. We want to make some, combine it with music, combine it with some art, graffiti demonstrations, dancing,
live
music.
That's very interesting.
So since it's the first time, I think it'll be cool. We've learned a lot, definitely. We have breweries from all around Spain. Lervik from Norway are coming. Olja from Holland are coming.
Nice. Well, when will it be?
7th and 8th of October. And I mean, everyone is welcome. I know you are 800 kilometers distance because I did it yesterday. you can always come a day and come back the day after.
No, but that's very interesting because that's a region I like.
Yes.
I haven't been there for many years.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe...
it's a chance.
Why not? Now, it's very interesting that you talk about that because it's been... I actually had this conversation on the last episode. We are talking about why some festivals are just closing. They are not continuing anymore because people are losing interest. Do you think that people are losing interest about those festivals because they are all the same or think people are not able to afford going to those festivals anymore? It's lack of interest, what's going on?
My theory from me going to festivals is that for a start, anyone can organize a festival, and not anyone knows how to organize a proper festival. So that is a beginning. Then I know, for example, in the north of Spain, practically every weekend there is a festival. Oh. Okay, if not every 2 weeks or something, but it's very common, no? Especially in good weather. What I'm trying to say with this is that it's not something you are waiting for. You know, there's, for example, one of the big festivals, no, in Spain, Barcelona Beer Festival. Mm-hmm. No, mm-hmm. That is very big, and it's a very cool festival. So people wait for that, okay? But then there's plenty of mini small festivals that many of the same brewers go there. So it's not as, how would I say? Like, you're not going to something new. So, I mean, you can go to a bar the next day and just drink that beer, or just call them and meet them. And since it's not like innovative,
I understand.
It's not that as interesting, you know? So I don't think it's just the quality of the beer or stuff. It's just what a festival is becoming a bit nowadays. And I'm not saying big festivals, because big festivals are always cool. But small festivals, you have to do it really good or something different to make it attractive.
You have to make it a party.
You have to make a party. I mean, what's the point? That's what I always say. You make a festival or an event, okay? And you put maybe 10 or 15 breweries. What do you do apart from getting drunk? Just sit and eat.
Yeah.
And then you get bored and go home drunk.
That's it.
Okay, cool. I'm done. But if you combine it, as I saw with you before, the Caminha Festival, Porto Festival, you put music, you put food. It's fresh air. People enjoy. It becomes a party. I mean, who doesn't want to go there? You know, I mean, everyone wants to enjoy.
Yeah, everybody loves a party, and if you have good beer,
even better, no?
Even better.
And if you don't drink beer, you can drink cider. And if you don't drink cider, you can probably drink another thing, no?
That's the thing.
So you have to make things interesting. You have to make it attractive, or else you're just going to be one more.
So you don't think that the festivals thing is ending? We just have to change the way some festivals are being.
I think. I mean, discos and parties are always there, and people go, no?
Sure.
Why can't a festival be something like that? Just make it interesting for people. You know, make it different. Add things people like. Make it cozy for families. Make it fun for friends. There's space for everything, no? But you just can't put a festival down the road in a square of a city and say, look, beer festival. And people just come by, have a beer and leave. Why? Because there's nothing more to do. So just, I mean, everyone has to improve what they do, or else people just don't like
it. So in your opinion, we must organize a party and have some beer coming with the party.
And take care of people, which is what they want. You know?
Of course.
When you go to a place, what do you expect? At least a minimum of good things, you know? Why do you want to stay in a festival? Because you're dancing, because you're drinking beer, because you're with your friends having fun, because you have some food in the same spot, some good food, some good beer. I mean, any festival or anything that has that, you're going to stay there for 4 or 5 beers, and you're going to have dinner, and you're going to spend 50 or 60 euros, and you're going to do it happily. No?
That's it.
I think that's the way of doing things.
Thank you. One last thing before we end. I have to refill so we can toast before we leave.
Okay.
But before that, I want you to ask you to leave a message or any idea, any thought you think that could help our market grow, like encouraging people. What message would you like to leave to
I think we just have to continue, have fun with what we do. The craft beer community is a very cool community. I think there is a lot of friendship, good relationships, and I think since it's kind of an industry that is very different from many of the other industries, it's not common to go to a festival or to a place where everybody knows each other and you enjoy sharing things and you don't treat the other people as competition. So that is, I mean, that keeps this kind of business very close and very warm. And just keep on producing good beers and step by step, because I don't think this is a race or anything. It's just a matter of time of people having fun, people having to getting to know this, and just enjoy what we do. And that's how things work out in anything, I suppose. No? Yeah. If you like what you do good things. And if people like what you do, obviously you're going to grow. So just keep it up and enjoy.
True. 100% agree with you.
All right.
I have to refill.
Oh, this refill.
Not enough to toast.
Sorry. Refill.
Oh, is it okay? Is it okay?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay,
so Ricardo's back. And now I'm going to be the one that's asking the questions.
Okay, that's nice, that's nice. Okay, this is an extra.
This is how do you say the false part of the videos? No.
Okay.
So Ricardo, talk to me about your bar. How long have you been open? Why did you open it? And what type of beers do you have here?
But everybody that's listening to this, they know the story.
Okay, so I'll ask other questions, Ricardo.
Yes.
Talk to me about your favorite. Maybe two or three breweries from Portugal or internationally. What do you?
Well, I cannot say that because everybody else will be just hitting.
All right. Let's keep on changing the questions.
You have two fails now.
We have a problem here because Ricardo has asked me all the questions and I have answered everything, but he doesn't want to answer anything. So, Ricardo, talk to me about your two favorite style of beers and
why. That's easy. That's easy because everybody that I meet. Okay, so my favorite beer style is West Coast IPA. Mm-hmm. This one I think was an easy one. And I would go afterwards for, it's difficult to say, but maybe some straightforward, simple Imperial Stout.
Okay, classic.
I do like barrel age. I do like very, how do you say when you put together some extra things like tonka beans?
Adjuncts,
that's a thing. I do like those.
Okay.
But give me a simple, straightforward, like our, for instance, Lovecraft Black Mama.
Okay.
And that's my, so I would go for these two.
Okay, yeah. So Imperial Stouts and West Coast IPAs, yep, no?
For sure.
Okay, right, next question. This you have to answer.
Okay.
If you had to choose one beer for the rest of your life, what beer would it be?
Do you want a name of the?
Yeah, I want a name.
Okay, I would go for the... that's difficult.
I'm sorry.
I know which one.
Please tell me.
I don't know if I can say that.
Okay, give me the initials and I'll say it.
Okay, it's from Dois Corvos.
Okay.
And it's an IPA.
Okay, excellent.
Okay, that's it.
Okay, enough information. Last question of the day. Okay. Two more questions. Let's talk about something we don't talk about usually, okay, which are the glasses we use for drinking beers.
Okay, that's a nice question.
Okay, because there are plenty types of glasses. We have the Teku glasses, we have the Weiss beer glasses. At the end of the day, this is a simple question. Out of which glass do you enjoy drinking the most?
I drink all my beers from the Teku glass.
Okay, excellent.
Okay, I have an exception.
Which one?
Imperial Stouts.
What glass do you drink it from?
I drink it usually on that very fancy glass with the bottom, large bottom.
Okay. I understand what you mean. And Imperial Stouts look very good there.
Yeah, they look good. That's it. And I do have a very expensive glass I use, which I bought some years ago. So I have to use it because it was so expensive. I feel bad if I don't use it.
All right. Okay. And one quick question, the one last question to finish. What style of craft beer would you make disappear because you hate?
Oh, none.
None?
None. There's not a single style of beer I don't like. Well, I may like some more and others less, but I haven't drunk any beer that I said I don't like this style.
Okay.
All none. Right. None. At this time.
Sorry. Wine or cider?
Wine.
Wine?
Because I do not yet, I have to say this, disclosure is very, this is very important. Even though I've drunk good ciders, I do not yet develop myself the taste for it.
Okay.
I do not yet know how to appreciate that.
Okay, I understand what you mean.
I do like ciders a lot. I think we have a huge potential in Portugal and overall, not just in Portugal. We have many people making good ciders in Portugal and outside, but I'm not yet capable of appreciating a cider as well as I do a wine.
So you're not ready to judge what a good cider is?
No, definitely not. Not even a beer. Okay. Technically, I'm very limited.
Okay.
I'm not very... If you ask me to judge a beer or make like a blind tasting or something like that. I would not be able to do so because I'm very, very limited technically. I just know if I like it or not.
Okay, well, we agree that the most important of judging a beer is whether you just enjoy it or not, and as simple as that.
That's the thing. That's the thing. All right. That's the thing.
Okay, so I'll leave Ricardo alone. He'll say goodbye. And
okay, Jaime, thank you for inviting me for your podcast.
Thank you very much. Okay, you can listen to it in Ricardo's podcast. But anyway, this was my interview.
Thank you very much. So, Jaime, thank you very much for coming. Okay,
thank you very
much. It
was
my pleasure to meet you. I've met you before, but it's very nice meeting you deeply now.
Okay.
And I hope we have a chance to repeat this interview somewhere in the future. And hopefully with your place already open.
Hopefully.
And hopefully on your place already open. Exactly. So thank you very much.
Salud.
Thank you. As for you that you are listening to this podcast, I hope you enjoyed it. This was my second attempt at making a podcast in English. I hope I was not as bad as my first one. I'm guessing the third one will be better. And now in Portuguese, for those that that always listen to me, obrigado por terem desse lado. Foi um prazer enorme ter o Jaime aqui. É sempre muito bom termos uma perspectiva diferente daquilo que é o mercado noutros sítios, experiências diferentes. Espero que tenhas gostado. Peço que partilhes este episódio com duas pessoas ou mais. E no final, o que vale é mesmo esta partilha. De resto, a mensagem do costume: bebe menos, bebe melhor. Um grande abraço e até ao próximo episódio do podcast Beijar de Sandal com Ricardo Sousa.